Channel 2 right and beginning a Hunks Phase report on Smitty and then on Debbie this Sunday morning, 24th of February, 74. Channel 2 right and beginning a Phase report on Smitty, then on Debbie this Sunday morning, 24th of February, 74.
Yes, I have lived with this so much, I thrive on it. It's not that I particularly love it, but I have just worked myself into the attitude, you see, that it is the one thing that's fruitful that I do. Now this thing here, you see, you don't have to worry. I'll carry it, and you can lean on me. I'm used to that. The only thing that bothers me is when they nip at my ankles like the little puppy dogs. I think that's so childish, you see. And they nip at you. Now you see, last night when we talked to Jack, I had this letter to go by. Now, I don't know what happened, but all at once, you see, these things are right substantial. And he seems to sort of listen to what I say in my letters.
Yeah.
And for all this time we've been down here, you see, these letters have been as perfunctory, as empty, as any document you ever saw from people who ought to know better. Now you say this first little go-round here, I told him about our cards, and he said we finally got something, you see, that would hold us up, keep us, you see, spare us from the mechanics, spare the mechanics from us. And he'd faced that problem long ago when he had a Toyota. He had two of them. Now, I don't know whether Jack's not given to overstatement or baiting people, but he says a tank of gas would keep one of those things going around on their errands for 6 weeks. And it's a small tank.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't get the point of that Odom thing, using solar energy that goes back at the time he lived in Florida and so in South Florida, you see the heated water was heated, the sun's heat. Point of it is they were talking about it here, it was what they call net energy. What he pointed out was we had all the sources of energy like shale, but it cost so much to get it out. By the time you got it out, it cost about as much as the energy was worth. You had to put, it took about as much energy to work the shale up as the shale would produce. So you were just given six for six.
That's what David Anthony said. Why hadn't I thought of that?
Yeah. Why hadn't I thought of that? Well, now that'll get around. Now, then he picks me up on the I don't remember what I said about that. Oh, the mind fix. He says there are a good many kinds, and he picks it up in the way I haven't kept up with it. This rigid scholarism, you see, of the northeastern places, schools, and the posturing of his California colleagues, and then he doesn't feel too close to McConkie at Cornell. Now, that's worth going into, Faye, and he'll go into that down here. But of course, he wasn't up there long enough to see what they did. He got that nice statement, you see. One of the advantages of the cultural lag of scholars in the South is that it allows them as scholar have been a benefit rather than an obstacle. Certainly, I think it's easier to live a reasonably contented and sane life in the South than it is in the Northeast.
Uh-huh.
They've got something between them and that rigid scholarism. Now, that's his turn, not mine. Now, he picked me up on the new post. He wasn't hard with me like Roscoe was. If he knows me at all, he'd know I'm not looking for a new post. I just merely said that it's a shame I didn't have a new post, couldn't get a new post now, when I had all these things to work out, and when I had a chance, I didn't have much to work out. This little report then on how they're contracting up there, you see they're short of money, you see they don't have time or effort for any playing around. You'd be weighed down if you were up there. They'd give you something to do all the time, and the administration still asks for innovations, but if you suggest one, they expect the man who suggested to administer it and carry on his old load and at the same old salary. He knows that only too well, you see. See, that's now he has all that to report on. Now, if he came down here, you see, he just can't imagine, see, what has taken place down here. There's just no way of doing it. If you get into it little by little,
and
in a week's time, you can do a vast amount.
Yeah.
With a fellow like Jack and Bertie.
Yeah.
But when you went up there to see Smitty, you thought everything was fixed. JR had got a hold of the car when I was over there talking to him. When I caught him that day out there in the sun, sitting on the tailgate of his that Ford pickup truck that he feels so close to, swinging his legs to get that knee to working again. And then in the middle of it, I thought of it, and I said, "JR, I've got something here that's just wobbling and shaking and shakes the steering wheel. It's so wobbly." I lifted the hood, and he looked at it and said, "That's your power steering." And he reached around there and tried to see what was loose, and he saw that bolt underneath it that held it onto a bracket. You see, the one nut was on this side and one was on the back. So he hobbled around and got him a couple of wrenches, one to put the back to hold the bolt and one in the front there to tighten the nut on it. And later, he didn't tighten it all the way, he said. He didn't know how far it ought to be tightened, how tight it ought to be. But he said it looked like it had been backed off. And I think it was, Faye, because you see, it was the nut was way out from the bracket. And even Smitty, you see, didn't propose loosening it up to where it would just wobble. But anyhow, when you got up there, when you went by to see Smitty,
I thought it was all, it was all fixed. I remember, you asked, well, why hadn't they tightened it when they looked at it over at Orange Hill? And he said that it was because they didn't know to. So I figured that it was all right, and I was a little surprised when you said, when you said you better go look at that, have Smitty listen to it. I thought that was a little odd,
because
I thought it was all fixed. Well.
Well, when you got a chance to get Smitty to listen to your motor.
Yeah, you better do it.
Yeah.
I called him on Monday, and he said, bring it in Wednesday early.
Bring it in early at noon.
And I was going to meet Debbie at 12, so I got into town, and I thought, well, I won't go by the house. I'll just go by the gas well
right
first thing.
Right straight by gas well.
So, well, when I went down the lane here, I heard this noise. And out on the highway, I heard it, and I thought, well, golly, maybe it did occur to me in the back of my mind, maybe J.I. has done something to this thing. I never heard it sound like this before. And I pulled up there at the gas well. The first thing I saw was a big homemade sign out of gas, and the cars were just filled. I didn't get even find a parking place. I couldn't see Smitty anywhere, and I looked back there, and there were two cars on the rack. No, one was on the rack, one was down.
Both racks had cars on them.
Yeah, and one was down below, and the hood was up, and I wandered around, and there was Smitty with his head on the hood. So I went right back there, stuck my head under the hood, and I said, am I too early? And he said, you know, like he does, he gave me that sidewise smile of his and looked, thought a twinkle.
Twisted his mouth
around to one side. He said, Uncle Johnny will take you home. Leave the car. Uncle Johnny will take you home. Well, you know, I knew I wasn't going to leave it because I wanted him to hear what I heard. So I just kept my head under the hood a minute. He went on working. I said, Smitty, it wouldn't take you 2 seconds to listen to that thing. I said, you know, I don't trust anybody but you to listen. If you just listen to that thing, you could tell me what I need. Well, he took his head out from under the hood, wiped his hands on that old oily cloth, and marched over to the car. He knew where it was. He'd seen me drive up.
Well, he sees everything.
He doesn't miss a thing. He didn't even tell me to start the engine. He just raised the hood. And I didn't tell him it was the power steering. I just said they had a fellow out here tighten the rod, and it made it. He said that was the trouble. So he just shook that power steering thing a little bit, and it shook. And then I said, well, this fellow out here in the country said it was too loose, so he tightened that rod down in there. And Smitty went around on the other side and looked at the rod. And he came back around and shook it again and didn't say a word about that. He just looked at me and he said, get in. And there was that whole lot full of cars. Oh, and another thing happened. When he raised the hood, two fellas came running out. Fellows I didn't know, I hadn't seen before, worked down there. They came out in a hurry, as if, you know, there's something real interesting going to happen if Smitty was going to look at it. They wanted to learn. And when Smitty said, get in, well, they went on back to what they were doing. And we started on a ride. And I said, well, you better take it over some bumpy places, because that's where I hear this noise. He didn't say anything. And I was chatting on, you know, I was going to tell him a few things. And then I realized he was listening. So I hushed. And about 3 or 4 blocks later, he said, you don't need to tighten this screw, that rod. He said, that's supposed to be loose. It's a floating power steering. Let it float. And he looked at me again and thought, twisted his mouth, and he said, let it float again. I said, oh. Then I said, you know, like I always do, I keep carrying it on. I said, oh, Smitty, maybe he's tightening it too tight. Maybe that's why that sound. Smitty says, nope, it's all right. It's loose enough. Just don't let anybody fool with it. They don't know what they're doing. So he passed the 7th place, and I pointed up toward my house, and I said, that's where I live. He didn't pay a bit of attention, didn't say, oh, yeah, or anything. He was listening, just listening to that motor. And we got on an eighth. He said, well, we'll speed her up a little. So we really, he let it out. We went up eighth and down eighth and over some bumps. I guess, I don't know how long it was, but I kept quiet while he was listening. Finally, he said, yep, that's it. I bet you got nylon tires. Yep, he said, you got nylon tires. And you know, it really still didn't mean anything to me. He said, that's that sound. He said, you heard it when you first started, but when you got into town, you didn't hear it so much? I said, yeah. Yep, he said, that's nylon tires. And he said, I don't hear anything except for the sort of fan belt noise. And then, you know, he sort of reared back in the car as if he'd come to some conclusion. He diagnosed the case. And he enjoyed it. He did. He said, some car. He said, some car. And he turned off eighth and had to put the brake on. And I said, would you put a spring on that brake, Smitty? He said, I ain't got no spring. And I said, sort of, you know, fussing like, I said, well, you can get one. He said, can't get no spring. And then I got to, I'm sure my voice raised a little bit because I was sort of, you know, playing and exasperated. And I said, well, Uncle Johnny said, but he didn't throw off on Uncle Johnny. He never does. He said, this car, Chrysler car like this, don't have no spring for the brakes. He said, did you ever try to put your foot under the brake and pull it up? I said, yeah. He said, it won't pull? Has to come up itself? I said, yeah. Spring wouldn't help it. There's no spring for it. Now, I think I said, well, you know, it's sort of a nuisance to have it come up so slow. He said, yeah. It might wear your brakes a little bit, he said, not much. But said 4 or 5 years, you might have to replace the whole unit. It won't hurt. No worries. Now he reared back, and we drove on in, and he parked at Gaswell just about where I did. He got out, and I said, well, Smitty, I feel better. Thank you. He said, well, when you have any more, hear any more noise, drop by.
Bring it in.
And he grinned. And then he walked on his heels. You know how he does. He walked on his heels with his head thrown back. Last time when I pulled away, he had his head stuck back under the hood. And I'm sure he was away from the place 30 minutes. Good 30 minutes.
Oh, 30 minutes past the fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not there was somebody looking at you.
Yeah. And he listened. And I had just about time to go to the house and turn the furnace on before I met Debbie. So I was sort of floating. You know, I had this ride with Smitty, and he'd okayed the car.
The car was all right. The
car was all right. And there was a lot full of cars, and Smitty had taken time off to do this for me. So I was right cocky. And I told Debbie that I'd meet her at your office. I might not have the car, but I'd meet her. And she wasn't there, and I looked, and I saw this. I didn't recognize her.
You don't have to wind up on that.
Yeah.
Just start in on.
Yeah. And she came on over, and we had lunch in the car. Put our drinks on there. That's a good table.
Oh, you didn't take a sandwich?
No, I didn't take a sandwich because I wasn't sure. And Debbie had an apple, but we got a sandwich over at Crystal.
At Costa.
Yeah. Well, we got one of those little ones, 18 cents, something like that. And one of the things that made me mention the way she was dressed, because I know she can't wear her jeans to the office over there. But it sort of does something to you, you know, when you have to put on your campus clothes in an office. It you're not quite as comfortable in a pair of panty hose and a little dress as you are in a pair of jeans in her outfit. And I think that's true. I think she misses it. You know, she likes the dress. But anyway, we were sitting there in the car eating. And she started out on that graduate building. It's like a mausoleum, she said. The building itself is just that it's cold and impersonal, and it is. It's just, she said those four walls were just getting her, and for the first 2 weeks she's over there, she was melodramatic about it at the house. She didn't know how her family put up with her. And I just listened. She didn't have anybody her own age in her office, just her and Ms. Haynes. Ms. Haynes didn't like to talk. And she said, she just...
Ms. Haynes is broken in, Faye.
Yeah, she didn't know. She guessed she should feel lucky that this was... It wasn't just a regular secretary's job. It was had something to it. But she was melodramatic about it, but she'd about got her feet on the ground there. And she was ashamed of herself. Because she should have done what God told her all along, is to look at it, inquire, and make the most of it.
Just look at it.
Yeah, what was, she might find out something. And she said that, but she said, you know, those things I read are so incomprehensible. It's not that I have to know the subject, it's just that they just, it's just trivia. And it's so just, you can't even read a sentence and make any sense out of it. She said she had one light spot that when that was refused, and this boy called her from Tallahassee and said she just ruined his PhD, and he just couldn't, it just was awful. And she said, well, you have to talk to the dean. And she said, you know, I got a sort of a kick out of that. Here was a fellow there that could explode. And he did. And he did to the dean. But she said that was the most impossible thing she'd ever read. So she said, we do have our light moments. And she said, Ms. Haynes figures that this is a publication. She looks at it as a kind of her publication. And she said, I can look at Ms. Haynes. And it could be I can learn something from these dissertations I read. She said, one of them, she said, I can learn something about structure and making statements. And she said, a recent one about restoration drama was something that she could learn if she looked at the way it was put together. And it's something, she said, that I can't do. And guy knows it. And I could learn from that. So she says, I got my feet on the ground. But she said, they're not going to have me long over here. They don't know it, she said. And I thought of Cookie.
Yes. Anyway, he just sort of humoring himself. He won't have to put up with this forever.
Yeah.
And then sort of playing to you that you won't have to put up with that forever.
Yeah.
And they understand it. It's pretty well, there's some, it's pretty clear, you see, that we're not interested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But it's the same thing. As
it's that Cookie statement,
isn't it? It's that Cookie statement, uh-huh. That, like, you know, when he was standing there at the filling station saying, they think I'm thinking about this station, but I'm not. I'm thinking about something else.
Thinking about horses. They wouldn't realize people coming here wouldn't never think that I was thinking about horses.
That's right. Yeah. And this was the kind of thing with Debbie. And I said to her, when she said that, I said, well, it'd be my notion to get in there and make the most of it. If you're going to have that job, make the most of it. Put everything you got in it and make the most of it.
Yeah.
And
while she's over there, show a little muscle.
That's right. And she picked up that word muscle right away. And she said, I'm not going to be, I am going to be muscular. Well, anyway, this gave me a chance to ask her, and she's talking about it being incomprehensible. I said, well, you know, Debbie, most things that people write are very few, they have an audience.
Very few
readers. Yes, there's a small audience for anything that's serious. And she said, well, yes. I said, you know, have you found anyone who can read the French Experience? It came very naturally. And that's when she said, not really. And she was disappointed that her godmother couldn't read it. In the way that she said Guy and I wrote it, or that Guy worked it out, or that we worked it out, she said. And she had written to her godmother about what to look for. And she hoped that when her godmother got down here next month that there could be some talk. Because I think of all the people that she knows, she would like for her godmother to respond to it. And then she said that Nathan was interested, but she thought that he'd talk with you more than he would with her. And he just asked her what she was going to do with it and thought maybe it ought to be published. Oh, so that was what brought that little... Now, that was in my mind to find out from her. And she brought up about being muscular way back when we were talking about her working over there and about how she was melodramatic. And I said, you know, Debbie, I'm the one person who ought to know not to use you. And just look what I did to you last Saturday. I said, I told those children when they called and said they couldn't get out here, I said, well, go to your house and come out whenever you were ready. And what happened? You came in and met them and had to wait for them and then offered to take them over to the riding place and then take them back in town. And I got you into it. And she started to stop me when I said at the first, and I know she started to say, well, I wanted to do it. I didn't mind doing it. And I said, yes, I know you don't mind doing it. But you just multiply that by all the friends who use you, and you see what you haven't got any time left to write. She said, yes, I recognize that. And I said, you could very easily have said to the girls, I'm going to leave here at 2:00, and if you want to go with me, you be right here at 2:00. And if they weren't there, just go off and leave them. That's all there was to it. But see, I got you into it, and that's it. And then I think I said, I'm sure I started it. I said, and when they got out there to get the horses, I felt like saying, no, Margaret and Valerie, these are not your horses. They're Debbie's. Debbie's nursing Noopy through her foundering, you know. And that's all I had to say. And she said, you know, when I got back home that night, I just cried. I thought, you know, I felt just like Mildred. Christmas. He didn't have a toy to play with. And he said he was not any fun to grow up. And I felt like I ought to be just back sitting out there on that watering trough with Missy. And then I knew that that time was past. I had done too much and seen too much at the ranch for me to be that child again. And I had to be more muscular. And again, she used the word. And it gave me a chance then to say, well, when you come out there on Saturday, you've got to have something in your mind to do, unless you just want to lie fallow. Now, I said, Rick said he just had to lie fallow. And she said, I don't want to lie fallow. You know, I didn't say, well, you've been doing it.
What you've been doing since
Christmas. For Christmas. But I said, but I didn't say you've been doing it, but I did say, you know, that little place in the French Experience where a guy said he was at a dead end. And you and I both sort of thought, well, we ought to get him to change something. It's a little self-effacing there. People won't understand. I said, you know what he meant? And of course, he still didn't. I said, if he could say he was at a dead end, and his focus, he had been working in it, and that it's difficult, and you do get at a dead end, then the young scholar should admit that there's a dead end every once in a while, or that they misread. I said, you know, it was 3 years before Suzanne ever admitted that she goofed. And it seemed to be a great hurdle that she was over when she finally let down and said, look, I goofed. And I just never understood why she couldn't afford to let herself think she could ever make a mistake.
With me setting them an example all the time, with every time I put my foot in my mouth, I said so.
Right, and I said, that's what Guy meant, you know. And when you feel like lying, fella, just say you're going to lie, fella, and nobody will have to guess what you're doing.
Yes, proclaim it.
Announce it. Pronounce it, yes. Announce it to the world that you just fed up. And but if you propose to do something, then don't just halfway do it. And now, that gave me a chance to bring up that about the car. And I said, if you want to come out, want to make your rounds, want to write, bring your typewriter, mean business, be vigorous. And I told her about the car, that I didn't want to sell the car, but that it would be available for her. She had put in her name. And then when she got one of her own or went on to something else, she could let me have it back. Well, she thought that would be fine. So that didn't give her any excuse not to come out at her convenience. She wouldn't have to work around her mother. I didn't put any deadline on it and say, now I want to know by a certain time. But this thing of how she'd come out on whenever the weekend was or whenever she came out, I think she said it enough. And when I went back to her also, we're talking about that, and I said, you see what Guy did? He said that Saturday before when you were out here, that you were going good. We were talking about little Bessie, and he got little Bessie up here. And then it took the rest of the afternoon. It's just difficult for us to not direct you. And so you've got to be muscular yourself and show what you're going to do. And don't come out there just willy-nilly. She said that she wanted to bring her typewriter out and work some. And I said, well, that was up to her. So we had I had those little points, those little things I wanted to get out with her. And when she got out of the car to go on back over, she said, now, I won't come out unless I've got something on my mind. And I will be muscular. She's so like a little girl who's learned a lesson. And I said, well, Debbie, that's up to you. But that's the only way that you can come out and expect Guy to help you and work with you. And when you do come out, check with him the first thing so he'll know what's on your mind and won't be just hanging around wondering what you're going to do.
That would be a great relief, Faye.
Just come in and check.
Just come in and be direct about it.
Be direct about it.
If you don't ask me, just tell me.
And you can go ahead about what you're going to do, but then he won't have to hang around. And, you know, I told you, I think, already that we were going ahead just like we always did. Just take a little walk in the back pasture a little bit more, but we were going ahead. We hadn't let up. We weren't lying fella.
Yeah.
And, it was here, and she said, now I want to write, and I want to write from experience. And I said, well, I heard Guy say you could use this material in a number of ways. you know, see what you can do. So she bounced on over toward her mausoleum. And then when she called Friday night, she had this temperature and a sore throat. And she thought she'd better not come out and get it, spread it around. But she was writing, she said, with muscle. She had gone from here. When the girls went down the lane on the horses, Debbie said, now I'll come back and pick you up, take you to your lesson. And I said to Debbie, oh, you don't need to do that. I have to go anyway, so I'll take them. So she went right straight from here then over to Mr. Weaver's. And she said she'd spent the afternoon with Mr. Weaver.
He picked right up. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I want to hear what went on, see.
Yeah.
Because, you see, when I go there, I run the flatheads down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talk about how much he has done, you see, and he doesn't... It's so fruitless. But there you are again. You see, he doesn't pay much attention to me or things like that that I say. You can't get around it, Faye. They're all flattered when these flatheads come around.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care what the flatheads do or how they act. It's just flattering to them.
Sure it is. Why wouldn't it be? Yeah.
No one else pays them any attention.
No one else pays them any attention.
And can listen to them when they talk.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be flattering? I'd be flattered too if they'd come around and listen to me.
Yeah.
No, I can teach them how to listen to other people, but I I can't teach them how to listen to me.
You see, that's I don't know what sort of spirit Spears has, but when you said, now, let's go out and see these youngsters on the working with these horses.
That's right. He nips at me.
I've seen girls before. You know, I don't know. You know, if he's going to set the stage. He's going to, you know, just moving along with you.
No, he's not going to move along with you.
He's sort of Florida cracker, whether it's Florida cracker. I don't know what it is. But,
J.R. won't do that.
That's right.
But Spears is the only one. He's, I don't know.
You have to sort of look at him. You know, you can't go around just saying what people one way or the other. Now, he came over here with all that bunch of onions.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
And he has in mind using my old Ford tractor.
Yeah.
Say, what in the world is he going to use my tractor for? All he got just a little garden plot. He's not going to take my tractor out and hire it out to other people, is he? He wants to put the cultivating equipment on it.
For that little garden plot?
Yeah. All he needs is a rototiller. You know what a rototiller is. Something that you hold in your hands.
Yeah.
Or steer with your hands.
Yeah.
Almost like a, not much more complicated than a power mower, lawnmower.
You suppose he's heard that J.R. bought it?
He knows damn well that J.R. bought it. He knows J.R. got a bad knee. Why did he let on to me that he don't know that? He knows everything that goes on.
Well, you know he does. Said he hadn't seen J.R. in 9 years.
Bus is enough for him. Well, I can appreciate that, but... Now, he's not going to get it. I'm going to be using it about that time. When are we going to get this fella Grubb out here, Faye?
Greg?
Greg. Hell, he ought to just come on out here. I mean, J.J. ought to bring him.
But J.J. said, let him know and he would bring him. That's what I told
him. Well, I didn't catch that.
He said, talk it over with Guy and see if you'd be interested in anything like that. And let me know and I'll bring him out.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
You don't have to do that, Faye.
Well, I want to put my stuff up, my little thing that I make those sounds.
Channel 2 right around 500, and the end of this Faye's report. She made it a while ago. and the thing didn't record. The reel got to bucking and jumping, and I just had one of the machines on. This Sunday morning, the 24th of February, 74, channel 2 right, around 500, I guess, and in the phase report on Smitty and Debbie. This Sunday morning, the 24th of February, 74. And here's the beginning of Wade's visit. This Sunday morning, the 24th of February, 74. Channel 2 right around 500. Channel 2 right around 500. Beginning of visit with Wade this Sunday, the 24th of February, 74. This Sunday, the 24th of February, 74. Channel 2 right around 500, beginning of visit with Wade this Sunday, the 24th of February, 74.
I looked for your van yesterday and I didn't see a sign of it.
Well, I'm there all morning, but town shopping in the afternoon.
Well, that's an afternoon. Let me see. Yesterday morning I was... Let me tell you. I'll tell you. You talk about some screwball. You see these brackets?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ones I had on there, wow, just coming apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I measured it to get me some new ones. See how light I want. Well, that just screwed the whole thing up. Then I had to take the brackets off and put them back on again. And both operations is something. But you see, I already done it. It would have paid me just to take the damn things back and give them to them. It would have paid me just to throw them in the ditch and gone back and got some and left them brackets up there the way they were.
Old David still, he's taking a long time to understand things like that. That once you start disturbing something, it costs you four times to get it back right again. He wants to take a wall down, see? He thinks that's a move a door or something. He thinks that's the end of it. Well, hell, that's just the beginning. Just taking those things apart and putting them back together, trying to get them right. Good Lord, I know what you mean there.
You know, there's one door on this place. This was a pretty good door, but it's wobbly a little bit. That front door out there is just like a Cadillac door. The door and the screen. The house hasn't moved. And those things were put up by a man who had a good ear, a good eye. And they both had this. Just the children were out here for a while when I lived here. And of course, they've lived through sets of children being brought up out here.
The doors.
Yes. See, they've been here all the time. And I don't know how long that screen has been on there. But it was...
It
was
substantial, and it has lived through a couple of sets of kids.
It was an old door. It was an old screen when I got here. Of course, it's protected from the weather. I'll show you one other little thing.
Boy, those kids, they're the biggest wear on the door of anything in the world.
I had this little boy out here Friday night. I didn't know he was a freshman. But he's the one I advertised for up there to copy some tapes. And he picked up the notice on the bulletin board up there at the student department office, and he got a hold of me the next day. I never saw such a fella. I mean, he moves.
He's vibrant, huh?
He is vibrant. And let me tell you, Wade, what he is. He came Friday night, and I saw him in action. I'd seen him before, but under a little pressure. And out here, he was a little bit more relaxed, but he still moved.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you what he is. He's a disc jockey. He was in high school. He was a disc jockey and ran a radio station. And he still, at heart, is a disc jockey. And it's just phenomenal what those disc jockeys do. And it seems like all these children that come up are either disc jockeys or followers of disc jockeys.
That's a new power.
And you talk about moving, he don't lose any motion. Uh-huh. He wants to come over there from 8:30 to 11:30 and copy tapes. I say, bud, you're going to spend so much time starting and stopping. He won't spend any time stopping and starting. It'd take me a while to get in gear and then get out. I tell you, you got to make the world safe for people like that, or you got to make the world safe from people like that. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you know, I used to, it's getting so now, I'd like to see a few more of those people. It used to be that there were too many of them around, they'd bother you.
Yeah.
But I'll be damned. I'd like to see somebody hustling now.
Yeah.
I can't find it.
It would be a change, wouldn't it?
You know, it's got an open mind and still serious about things.
Yes.
The old hustler.
That you could depend on.
The old hustler was just always one way. He hustled down a one-way street. And the new ones coming along, they hustle about everything. You ought to see those guys there in Micanopy has opened up this new pizza parlor in town called Leonardo's.
Yeah.
Well, now, God, these are the craziest people I've ever run into in my life. I mean, you wouldn't think they could blow their nose, the whole group up.
Yeah, I want to hear about it. Let me show you this. Now, he went up there, and Wayne Daniel helped him. And they got all their machines up there that they thought they'd need and to set up something to copy these tapes so they could copy them fast. Now, let me show you what they did. They're simple. They got this Sony 252 like mine, that same one. And it's stereo. That's the only stereo that he has. You see, it's against that policy to handle stereo equipment. It's all monaural. Well, he took one cable over here, and this is a high class Panasonic, or I forget what they call it, but it's a good one. And what he did, this is a quarter track, and he converted it into a half track and put it here.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took another cable to see and took the other channel and put it over on this thing. And this is a big studio outfit. Also high fidelity. All right. Now this is the way on my tapes, the way I set it down. Mr. Weaver has a talk. That's one channel, the whole thing. And this is a channel, part of a channel. Well, now what they did, they wanted to take both these off at the same time, you see. Now this is sort of an obvious error. All their errors, you see, would be obvious. The fine points they would catch. Well, they put this track over on this machine, and this track they're going to put on a separate machine.
Mm-hmm.
So they got half of Mr. Weaver on one reel and the other half over here.
Now this channel still Mr. Weaver?
Mm-hmm. You see, he talks an hour, and then he talks this much on another hour.
Mm-hmm. That's the same direction on the tape. Do you record two directions or one only?
No, this is, you see, this one, he'll get straight, and this one will be backwards. Now that's
no help.
that's the sort of errors they make. Now, you see, Rick was going to do this for me, and he meant to do it. Well,
I don't understand why that would be backwards.
You don't need to understand it. Just take that for what it is. Now, Rick, else you get going backwards in a whirl. I get in a whirl. That's what I'm going to tell you. You see, Rick's got a good head on him. You see, he's mechanical. He can fix things. Well, he's not, you know, I've seen better. He can fix them too where they don't work. But
Now, he had already played out here. He had had just too damn much of it. And what I found is, and I should have known this all along, you see, at that age, they can take a great deal, but if you run them full gear there for a while, they got to take off a while and sort of grow up. They don't take off a weekend. They got to take off a month or two and grow up and get the responses back, you see, and just play and act coaches and all like that. And that is the same. That's what I've been cussing about, you see. Well, now, Rick had been out here over a year, and you see, we had just worked the tea out of him on a number of occasions, you see. All that stuff he got at the Revolution in Micanopy, that was a huge amount of stuff for a man who's never really taken on very much at the time. Why, he had so much stuff, he just walking around loaded with it. What Wayne said, the last time he saw him up there, he was over there operating that big machine and testing it over here on the other one. What came out, he was trying to run it off at 15 inches a second. That's a fast one. And he said he wasn't doing anything. He had that tape in his hand, and he'd go over there at that machine and stand a while. And then he'd walk back over this machine and stand on. He said he addled is my word, it wasn't his. But that's what he meant. Well, he just looked like he didn't know what he was doing. He just addled. Well, he was. But it wasn't altogether Rick's fault, you see, because he saw that they were telling him wrong. And he couldn't get it over to them that they were telling him wrong. And I went over there the other day, and first time I've talked to him since he sort of left here and been working full time over there. First time I've mentioned anything about business, and I brought this thing up to him. He says that's what happens over there. They don't listen to you. You see, he can tell them things, but they don't hear it. I telephoned Daniel before I went over there, and I was going to tell him this, and I could detect a little impatience in his voice, and I wouldn't tell him. In other words, he'd had enough of this foolishness, and a little bit more. He'd be erupting like Mark Twain, and I didn't want to get in the way. Now, what are you saying about your friend?
Oh, I was just going to talk about the crazy
pizza.
Yeah, they're talking about people that are hustlers. It's a different style of hustler now, the ones I see coming along. You wouldn't believe these people. He laid out. He quit work at the university. Hell, he was going to quit the world. He was going to go to Spain and stay with this paint Dali, Salvador Dali. Just quit. Sell everything he had, and he had money. He's getting paid good money at the university. And he's got a master's or something like that. But instead, he stuck around town for a while. And he you'd see him out on the street, and he'd he's an older fella. He's 25 or something like that, at least. You know, he doesn't look like a teenager, and he's standing out on the street of Micanopy practicing this kung fu nonsense, kicking his feet up in the air, and doing that all by himself. I look at him and I think he's crazy. I don't know what the local people think. And he runs. If he runs, he looks like a maniac when he runs. He doesn't look like a serious runner. He looks like he's running to Chattahoochee as fast as he can. Well, I'll be damned. Those guys opened up a pizza place in town, and that is slick from one end to the other. Brand new equipment. It's the best pizza in town. And they worked. The group of them, he and another guy and his sister, the three of them, they put in 20 hours a day on that place. They did everything, did all the graphics, all the painting, all the repair work, hiring everything done, supervised it all. Produce the pizzas, and they're a success already within 6 weeks.
And where are they?
Right across from old Santa Fe downtown there, back at D.C. Murphy.
Yeah.
Leonardo. And you go in there now, and you talk to them, ask them something, or you can say, I mean, they both act crazy as hell still, making money. They may be acting crazy, but they got an eyeball about that money. It's delightful. Both Jewish. And come from strict Jewish parents, you know, and really money people. First of all, they rebelled seriously against that world. But they had that, especially a fellow from town, from Micanopy. He just, you wouldn't think he would even have a thing to do with money. He rebelled so hard. But God Almighty, I'll guarantee you in 5 years they'll be so wealthy, it'll be terrible.
Just from pizzas.
Uh-huh. Just from pizzas. But they've got, both of them got that knack. I mean, it's like an innate ability to play the piano, I reckon, or something like that.
And then they can spell each other.
Yeah. It's nice to see them work together.
Well, now, if you had somebody who spelled you like that, it'd make a big difference, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you work together, sure. Hell of a big difference.
It let you take a breather, and then it'd pick up on your loose ends?
Mm-hmm. See, I got to think about everybody thing. And if I take off, think about something that's pleasure, everything stops. Like if I start writing about something or playing with it or reading something. See, just, that's what I mentioned the other day. It's hard to just jump in and out of that because once you get into it, you spend time.
Yeah.
You know,
you
it's just not sit on the pot and read one piece. If you get into it, it stays with you.
Yeah, it lodges.
I was, when I worked a little bit seriously, about 4, 5, 6 weeks ago on doing some writing, probably longer than that. But every motion I made during the day related to that, what I was working on. It was in my head. It was Debbie's work and your work and those two things.
That's crazy.
And that frame of mind stayed right with me the whole time. So it's something that you just don't casually do and put aside. And it can eat into you other time. Not that I object to it that much. I just do it too much.
Well, you can just take too much, just a certain amount of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you see that's the way it's worked out to me out here. I can't pass on any step in the process to anybody. Sooner or later, I get involved in all of it. You'd think anybody could copy a damn tape. But they got bogged down so that burned much, you see, back before Christmas. That I just had to tell them to go on home and think about something else. And now you see, I'm having to pick it up.
Is this young fellow going to be able to handle it for you now?
No. He's just a show. He said himself, once he got to talking about radio, he couldn't stop.
It's like Mr. Weaver and Dogs, man.
Yeah.
I found out this week, well, we've known it all along, but it's Friday, and I helped Harry Wood move Butch all day. And it's harking back to the old days of moving industry. Moved in my van, and good Lord, those people had a lot of stuff.
Oh,
did they? I mean, I, along towards afternoon, I got to feeling like an austere monk. Why, he gave me more clothes than I had, just casually.
Oh,
I had a box of clothes. This pair of pants and this sweatshirt and three shirts like this. Hell, I was looking around. I had to go to the washing machine every morning to get my clothes. But that was sort of just one side of the point. The thing is, it was heavy physical work because the second floor, long ways away from the van and carrying everything up and down and Unloading wasn't any problem. We just backed up and shoveled it in. But loading and packing and carrying some heavy materials, it wasn't the most strenuous job I've ever done, but not hadn't done it for a long time. It was a little bit of a strain. But good God, you talk about free mind. And I was using my mind to pack and think about, I mean, if I hadn't been there thinking, it would have taken, he was planning on 3 days to move. I was wondering what he's talking about. But the way they move, it would take them 3 days. And I moved him in 1 day. But that doesn't take a lot of thinking, just pay attention once in a while. But mind's clear.
What would he have done that you didn't, that you
say? Oh, I don't, they just casually put things in and they can load about 1/3 of what I can.
And one load.
Uh-huh. And I wasn't seriously packing it, because I knew what we could do. We did it in 2 van loads.
Oh, did you?
And 1 pickup truck. And he was planning on the van and the pickup truck making 3 loads and maybe 4. He was worried about what I was going to be doing yesterday so that he could finish moving. Hell, it was all unloaded at 4:30 in the afternoon. And 8:30 in the morning, he called up and wanted to know where in the world I was. You know, he was anxious. He'd been up since 6:30 looking at the weather.
Did he have a pickup?
Yeah, he had a pickup, but we only used it once because it was raining.
And 2 van loads.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 pickup truck broke.
Yeah, and that was a couple of chest of drawers and. It was a minor load. Wasn't a whole lot in it. But what impressed me was the idea that you see, my mind would have been able to get a hold of other things after, even after that work. Hell, you're ready to play, do anything, you know, just shower and rest a little bit. And I remembered back that.
You mean they were.
No, I mean, after doing the labor, the work all day long, the mind's okay.
Oh, you feel better.
Doesn't wear you out. Hell, you get into doing business work or some fretful work.
Yeah.
I'm talking about making you money
yeah.
type work.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of when I worked that summer here in town on another man's dollar. I mean, I didn't do it myself. See, when I was truck driving myself, I didn't quit. you didn't turn loose though, so you never had any time to play or do anything else. You're always driving and working. Well, hell, that summer, I wasn't making any money, but I'd work. Good Lord, these local moves would kill you. I mean, you could load a big truck and unload it in the same day.
And you don't get to sit and catch your breath long before you unload.
Right. That's all you get is that drive in between times, and then you have to unload it. But you're vibrant when you get through with it. The mind's not dead. You don't feel dull.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was ready to play, do anything.
But whenever you put in the day, business, and you got those loose ends in your mind.
Yeah. You're grumpy. Somebody say something to you, and you're not ready for anything.
Yeah.
That's a grump.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. In that Eric Hoffer thing, in that kind of job, you can. You can carry a bone around with you.
Freshens you up.
Yeah, he said he'd take a bone to work with him, and that's true.
Yeah.
You got to use your mind, but it's an orderly use of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't tax it at all.
Yeah.
It's very orderly.
And you've got no personnel problems.
Not if you stay on the bottom. Yes, sir.
Well, when you have to do everything, when you have to handle every step of the process like you do in your business. Now, I got impatient this last week, and I thought to myself, I'm going to quit messing around. I'm going to take some of these tapes and get some money out of them so Mr. Weaver will get some good out of himself. And I came over here, and to do that, you see, I'd have to have a clearance from him so I could transact business. I couldn't transact business and then call him up and see if it suited him.
That'd be bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just typed it out and went over there, got a haircut, and I gave him $50.
I just gave him $50 because my conscience was hurting me. He had been doing all this work. He helped us and talked to us, and all these flatheads had learned from hearing him talk. I thought, well, damn it, I'll start a little trickle of money in over here. And then I showed that thing to him. I said, if you will just put your name down here and give me clearance on that. And he read it. And he said he'd have to think that over. It works only easy, you see, within the things that he already knows. So you can't talk to him. That's what happens when you get weak. Your body's weak. You see, you can talk, but you can't listen. I've seen what a vast difference it is. And then when these people up at the campus are tired, you see, or when they've had a big day, they can talk. They can't, but you can't transact business.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to them, but you can't transact business. They're just for us. You see, I'm not asking him for anything because I got it all myself. The only difference is whether or not I can use his name. And I'm not doing it myself. You see, on something like this, on the material I've got, the tapes, you see, if I use any of them, what I use of them, since they are confidential, I can't make anything out of them. I'll have to put it on somebody
else. It'd be a shame to have to do that, wouldn't it? It's not only work, but it'd be a lot of work. I think you'd have to destroy it if you try to change names so that you're not liable. That's a bother.
You see, what I've been trying to do, I picked up Mr. Weaver's cue that he wanted to be known, you see, and have his name in print and all like that. One thing that bothered him, some of the things he said that I wrote down, you see, was spoken English.
I remember you talked.
Yeah.
Well, I never have gotten over there. Now that you've got, maybe I just, awkward just to go make an excuse. I think I just might go over with that objective in mind and sit down and see if I can't get into it.
And then if he comes out, as he could do it any time, I'd have his nephews.
Yeah, you got to wait a number of years or something before you can do anything like that, I think.
Yeah.
Because they could raise hell about it.
Oh, yeah. You see, they're the sort that would.
Oh, good Lord. Ooh, I'd hate to try to get them in agreement on anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Now, if one of them would agree to it, the other one would disagree just to be cantankerous with one agree.
Yeah.
It's that's the way it works.
But on this paper, you see, Mr. Weaver's, he's actually not agreeing to anything because we've been working on that assumption all the time. And he said himself, he doesn't know what the transaction be about. I'd be the one to do it.
What's on the paper? Just essentially that he'll allow you to use his name?
Yeah. That he'd give me free use of the material, and I specify his talk, the things that I've learned from him, and the conversations we've had, and the recorded conversations. Studies that we have made of all that. Of course, it's about the same thing you said, and just the use of his name.
There's hardly any way I think that he can comprehend how important he is. I don't believe he can even get an idea of that.
He don't need to get any idea of it. All he needs to know is that that's the only way I can get any money. And what I was trying to do is go ahead and push it to get some money. For him, I won't get any. I mean, I can't profit from it. I don't know what it is. You see, the mentality, that's where the mentality comes out, and you see where their experience hurts them and hinders them instead of helps them.
Mm-hmm.
When it's handling something like this, and I that's where your schooling somehow makes your mind a little bit more flexible. So you've got dark areas in the mind of the people who learn from experience. I only use it in one sense. It is their capacity for experience and their facility in reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that doesn't mean that what they say is right. But it's they have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing. And I have said in a small way on occasion, you see, that I'm not making any pleas for anybody. It's just that one thing. And I haven't studied them. There's so much about them, you see, I don't want to study. They're the ones who run this state road department, and you can get anything that's crummier than that. I don't know where you find it. It's crummy. Those people, you put them in the right place, and they're spiteful. Now, this one over here, you see, that you dealt with, you can't find anyone who's more spiteful than that. Or suspicious. There's simply no way possible of having any business dealings over there. And coming out, even. None. Well, that's where it goes.
Business dealings. I've been trying to put this Bicadope thing together. And I just found out for sure about this damn sports arena. And it's evidently going through. It's on Old Man Smith's 18 acres that he sold to Van Arnum and another doctor. And evidently they knew what the property was going for. Smith just sold it to them, turned over some money. They sold 18 acres for $92,000. And they high-talked and glib-talked everybody in town and the whole area, except for about a couple of people, and the fact that that's a nice thing they're going to do, a sports arena. Well, I've seen it. It's in Tallahassee. Same damn thing. Same people. Same company. He said, we don't need to do a feasibility or market research study, see if it's going to work. We know it'll work, because we've done too many of them. This is a report I got on it. And that's the thing over in Tallahassee. It's about 4 or 5 miles out of Tallahassee. Well, now this thing is right in Micanopy. See, 2,000 people. Micanopy is a town of 700. And you know damn well that's going to be over 1,000 cars down there, right at 1,000 for sure. The building itself is going to be one of these 10 buildings. At least that's what looks like. You can't tell whether it's a warehouse or what, except it's got a lot of garish stuff around it. Warehouses even look better. It's going to have some sign strung on saying wrestling tonight and all this kind of crap. Right on 441. And they did it. And I'm going to start action against them tomorrow if I can see if I can't stop it. I'm putting $100 into the attorneys to see what they can do tomorrow. If there's any way they can start and put a stop on it. I think it's just too many legal implications. I'd like to carry it to court. It's very ill considered. And it's people like this Fronton outfit, I mean, the High Life thing. Well, I went down there once or twice. I'd never been to it before, see what was happening. And it's a place people want, they like it. And that's out in the middle of the country somewhere. It physically only affects a few people.
They can take place in one big group.
Yeah. And all the traffic and the park, it's one time when they get back in business, and it's just that High Life thing down here past Orange Lake. Long about dark, you ought to just drive down there. You don't go in. And it's amazing, because you drive through the country, you turn down this road, and all of a sudden you go out, and there's this great building that's lit up in the middle of the nowhere, and a sea of cars. And you look at that. Can't believe it. Well, they want to do that right here in Micanopy.
Johnny Palmer said that the colored people in particular were over there, about 9 out of 10 of them was colored.
They weren't.
And that you could tell a difference in the buying power. They didn't have their money anymore anytime they went over to that thing. And it pretty well.
Oh, Lord, yes. There's a group. You wonder. Yeah, these one I went to. There's a great proportion of black people there, but then there's a great proportion of white people there. See, it's just, they're just not high class people. This is where the working man goes to do his gambling. The horse track, that's different. That's high class. Yeah, they go down, they bet $5,000 on a race.
Yeah.
And sit in air conditioned booth to do it.
I see Johnny Palmer would know, because all them fellas, that whole country over there, a couple of bad box up in him.
And he notices it, huh?
And he can tell if they can't. He won't let them have it, because they won't have any money to pay. Pay the bills. Pay what he puts down on paper for them.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been over there, but if you're in business, you ought to go and see what you're doing.
This man, Paul, old thrift station owner, moved out, gave it up. He went down to Orlando, won $2,000 in one night, that highlight game.
Yeah.
He's a money man. He's always after money. He makes money.
Yeah.
He made $2,000 here on this outfit during the whole season. He didn't lose. He made, but that was over the whole season. He made about that much money.
Yeah, to work at it.
Gamble. But he did that in one night down there. That was a fluke, but he did it.
Somebody else has got the jurisdiction.
Yeah, that's another story about how he got in there. It was his trailer, anyhow. I was going to say that Rip shouldn't have. I was a fool. See, I dropped out of politics for 6 months. In the meantime, this wrestling arena came in. They decided to beautify town hall by putting on goddamn columns on the front of that building and shutters. Put shutters and columns on the front of the old schoolhouse to make it pretty looking. Two-story columns in that building. All this stuff transpired while I was sleeping. And so I hadn't missed a meeting in the last about four or five of them. I can't go to a meeting but what I don't see something happening, and I turned a couple of tricks last time. Let's see what was one of them. they were trying to grant a permit for somebody to build a house, and they said, well, you know where the house is, the back of so-and-so and such and this, that, and the other. And Mr. Black made, he said, well, I'll make a motion with you. Approve this application, and then this any discussion or something like that. And I said, well, could I discuss it from the audience? And I suggested that it seemed to me that this was pretty quick approval. That nobody seemed to know exactly where the house was. It didn't seem to really fit into anybody's head. And they didn't get together to discuss it because that's illegal. I said, what you need is some review board or somebody to look at these things rather seriously and then offer a recommendation to the council. Said, look, it looks like this works pretty well. It goes here. And, well, Mr. Black withdrew his motion to approve that building permit. I thought that was right interesting that he did that. I wouldn't have expected him to do it. Now, he's one of the last of the really old-timers. And then the political thing that happened was this Doug Bonebrake of the Mother Earth people that had the old red and white store there, Meyer store. Well, he moved his trailer in, that little old aluminum trailer been sitting back of that. He got a one-year permit, temporary permit. He evidently didn't think he could get it. Permanent permit. On top of that, Joe Thomas signed it and didn't even go through the council. Well, it came, the year was up, and he made an application, and they turned it down, gave him a 3-month extension. At the end of the 3 months, he came back and applied for further for a permit application, and they wouldn't grant him that. And gave him 2 more weeks to make up his mind. He came back with an attorney. And the attorney started one of these whining, moaning, nitpicking goddamn attorney's actions. He made me so mad. They start being emotional about, well, he's got a dying grandmother and 3 dogs and all this kind of nonsense. Has absolutely nothing to do with the trailer or why it was there, legalities of the trailer. Then the attorney almost wound up walking out because of the way things transpired. Doug had done so many illegal things that he didn't even tell his attorney that. The attorney finally shut up. He couldn't even whine anymore. He had to be quiet. And I told Doug that if I'd been on the council, hell, I would have run him out of town, the attorney and all of them. Attorney was accusing the council of the illegal actions and stuff like that, and they were starting to get hot. Well, that passed all right, and we gave him another 2 weeks, and old Ebling, Walt, said to Doug, said, look, you come back here and tell me exactly how much time you need and how things are progressing, and we'll discuss it 2 weeks from now. And I'd already passed a note down to these people that said, look, ask for 2 years right now and you'll get it. And they wouldn't do it. So after the meeting, I talked to them. I said, give them a time schedule, lined up, and say, look, 18 months. I've got to have 18 months. I can't get anything done less than 18 months. And this, and this will happen. All you have to do is say it. And you'll get 18 months. Well, I'll be damned if he doesn't come up to the next meeting and say, well, here's Mr. Bonebrake on the agenda. I said, Mr. Bonebrake, what do you have to say? He got up and mumbled. And he said, well, things hadn't changed much from last time. He couldn't even open with a positive statement. He just mumbled around and bumbled. He says, well, I don't know. The way finances are going and things like that, I can't tell what's happening. So they just denied this. Let's see. At one time, they denied it, made him get out of town. And then, oh, I know what happened. After all this, and Bonebrake sat there and whined, and Ebling yelling and screaming at him, saying, look, you know what kind of man Ebling is. I mean, he's not successful in business by namby-pamby messing around saying he doesn't know. If it's wrong, he knows it's right. He's not a mugwump or whatever he is. He's precise. He wants everything down the line. One way or the other, it's got to be there. No grace for that man. So, and Doug was being atrocious. He's being like a six-year-old up there. They were whining and just carrying on something fierce. And Evelyn was getting madder all the time. And Black comes in, sort of interjects almost, says, "Well, I move we give him 1 year's extension." And Thelma had always been in favor because that was her property anyhow, and they were sort of favored sons of hers. Anything was fine. She seconded it. So, and there's old Troy hanging up there, and he's up for re-election. He's running again, see? So, so they call a roll call, and of course, first and second, I mean, Black and Thelma, both yes, and Troy, to get his votes, he yeses. He sees Doug is leading the long hairs maybe at that time, and if he says no, it's going to be Black on him, see? But all before, he'd have been against it. See, 6 months ago, he'd have jumped up and down and run him out of town. But he said yes. So that was the majority that did it, the three. And Evelyn, of course, voted no, because he was mad about it. So they gave him a year. And then Evelyn interjected and said, "I wonder, does Mr. Bonebreak understand that that 1 year means that that is 1 year, and that he's leaving?" He can be ready. Oh my goodness, Evelyn can sure be ready. Wow, he's just like a weasel cutting through things. And about that time, Doug gets up, and he said, "Well, what I want from the council is I want them to go back and cancel out all this and give me a permanent Philip permit." He really did. He asked for it. And he was mad. And that's what he wanted all along. He didn't see, after he brought his trailer there and whined and moaned to get it in on a temporary basis, now he figures he can grandfather in because he's been there a year. That's the mentality that guy's got. And Shirley's the same one. She figures,
I'm going a little faster than that.